In today's Mishnah, when the seventh and eighth Mishnah, when the ninth Perek Masech Tavav Abach, when the Mishnah begins, Hamechalech Nechasav Al Piv. So if someone is dividing up his property, as we said, someone can do that prior to their death. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Achad Bari V'Achad Mesukan, whether he is someone who is healthy or whether we're dealing with a Shchiv Merah, someone who is gravely ill, we say in both situations, Nechasev Sheyesh Lehem Achrayot Niknim B'Kesef B'Shtar or B'Chazaka. If we're talking about land, in order for the handover, to transfer into the ownership of the people who wishes them to receive it, that has to be done through the normal method of acquisition of land. So it's either money or with a contract or by way of a chazaka. That is where the person purchasing it or receiving it has to demonstrate ownership over that land, either by, say, digging in the karka in the land or, say, locking the gate, etc. If we're dealing with property that's immovable, then ein niknehim ela b'mashicha, then they're only acquired by the way that metaltelin is acquired. So if it's reasonably large, we say that was mashicha by drawing it towards him, or we've learned elsewhere the other forms of kinyan, that's behagba'a, if it's something that's very small, so that's by raising it, or masira, for example, if it's a large animal, handing over like the reins. We brought examples previously. Now, the important point here is Rebbe Eliezer's of the opinion that a shchiv mirah, his instructions, is no better than if someone is of full health. That in order for the property to be given to the various beneficiaries, we have to do a formal kinyan. However, the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim understand that there is a difference with a shchiv mirah. That is, that the words of a shchiv mirah, simply his instructions, are considered as if k'ktuvim k'mosurim hem, as if the contract has been written out and handed over. In other words, by his speech alone, the transfer ownership occurs. That's according to the Chachamim. So therefore, Amrullah, the Chachamim, said to Rebbe Eliezer, we said, we're talking about Masa Biman Shel B'nei Rochel, that there was an incident with the mother of the sons of Rochel, Shahaita Chola, that she was unwell, the Amran, she said, Tni Kevinati Leviti. She had this quite an expensive, say, scarf, and it says, V'hi B'shne Masar Maneh, which is 1,200 zuz, and she says, I want you to give this to my daughter, the meta, and she passed away, v'kiyamu et dvareha, and it fulfilled her wishes, and it was given over to the daughter. This is despite the fact that normally the Rusha in this situation, would go, everything would go to the, say, the sons. Here, but her instruction alone, she was a shimra, that was enough to close the deal. And so that's the argument of Chachamim. We see a precedent, we see a situation with the Shchiv Merah, the instructions alone is enough to transfer the property. Amar Lahem, Rebbe Eliezer responded to Chachamim, B'nei Rochel tekabrem imam. He argues that the B'nei Rochel, they themselves were Rishaim, they were quite evil people. So the expression here, when it says B'nei Rochel tekabrem imam, that is, the mother should bury these boys. In other words, Rebbe Eliezer is arguing that the reason in this situation why they kept her wishes is because the sons were not worthy of receiving it. What's interesting here, Kati cites a Gemara that whether or not they were Rashaim is actually also a debate between Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim, meaning that they were Mekayim Kotzim Bekerem, where they kept these thorns and stuff that grew in the Kerem, and according to Rebbe Eliezer, they were violating the Isur of Kilayim, so therefore it violated the prohibition of Kilayim, where Chachamim said that actually is not a violation of the prohibition of Kilayim, so therefore according to Chachamim, these boys weren't, if you like, they weren't considered Rashaim. So that is why they thought this is good evidence to the fact that simply the wishes of Shchiv Merah is enough to close the transaction, whereas Rebbe Eliezer says, no, this was an exceptional case. The Mishnah now continues, V'chachamim morim, the Chachamim argue, well, there's a different version here, according to Kati, the Sosek, Rebbe Eliezer say that B'Shabbat, if a Shchiv Merah, someone who's gravely ill and starts dividing his property or her property on Shabbat, then we say Dvarav Kayamim. In that situation, we would agree that since you cannot do Kinyanim, you cannot do transactions on the Shabbos, then in that situation, you would agree that would be sufficient to affect the transfer. Because one cannot do these acquisitions, they can write Shtarot on Shabbos. Aval lo b'chol, but during the weekday, since one would be able to write contracts and the like, then one would have to do a proper Kinyan. That fits into the position of Rebbe Eliezer, as we just mentioned. However, Rebbe Yeshua says, "B'Shabbat amru kal v'chomer b'chol." He says, Rebbe Yeshua says, if speech alone would be sufficient on Shabbat, then kal v'chomer it's more so during the week. And this is based on a concept we've seen, I think, a number of times before already, and that is known by the expression "kol haro'i l'bila ein bila me'akev," which means as follows. When it comes to the laws of menachot, so we're taking a little bit of a tangent here, but bear with me, that the largest size mincha offering you can have in a single kli is 60 isaron. And the reason why Chachamim put that limit on is because they understood that the flour and the oil would mix well. That's a maximum size one could have in one a single kli in order that the flour and oil would mix well. Anything larger than that, it wouldn't mix well. And therefore, one would not be able to bring it in a larger kli. What's interesting here is that even if someone bought a smaller amount in the smaller kli and they didn't mix the oil, that would be fine. That is because of the principle kol hara oilabila, provided that the quantity is such that one would be able to mix, we say then mixing itself is not me'akev. However, if you're going to bring it in such a large kli that one wouldn't be able to even mix it, then in that situation we say bila would be ma'akevet. The lack of the capacity to mix it together would present a problem. That's why if someone was bringing a mincha of, say, 61, you'd have to bring it in two different kelim. So the same principle here, Kohen for Reb Yeshua, the fact that in a situation where one can't do a kinyan of other sorts, meaning on Shabbat, and speech alone from Shechiv Mara is enough to affect the acquisition, so kal v'chomer when you have these other means available. In other words, he takes this to parallel the capacity, say, to do other kinyanim with the capacity to do mixing, to parallel the case of mincha and our case as well. So in other words, once again, Rabbi Shua says, if you agree, if the Chachamim say you can shiv merak and effect acquisitions through speech alone on Shabbat, then kal v'chomer during the rest of the week. Kiyotzeba, we find a similar matter. Zachin lekatan vein zachin legadol. The first opinion is that the concept of zachin means is that I can give a gift to somebody else in order that I can acquire it for a third party. So the Mishnah says, according to the first opinion, you can only zachin lekatan, that the only time you can use this way of using somebody else to acquire something for this third party is if we're dealing with a katan, meaning a minor who cannot acquire something for themselves, meaning there's no kinyan for a katan. You give a child a gift, he can't actually make a kinyan, he can't acquire it. However, for a gadol, we say no, you can't use zachin for a gadol, you'd have to give it to him directly. You can't use somebody else to acquire it for him. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, lekatan, la'amru kal v'chomer lagadol. If using somebody else to acquire something for someone that works for a katan, kal v'chomer, how much more so would it work for a gadol as well? Once again, because the gadol can zoche for himself, and he can also make a shaliach himself, which a katan cannot do, so therefore kol shalken can we use somebody else to acquire for him. Again, that's a similar way that the logic seems to be reversed by Rabbi Yeshua, and Allah actually follows Rabbi Yeshua. Now let's learn Mishnah Chet. Nafal abayit alav alaviv. Let's say a building collapsed on an individual and his father. Now this is going to be critical in terms of knowing who died first. Similarly, alav al morishav, or the building collapsed on an individual and the person he would have inherited from. V'hayta alav ktubat isha ubal chov. And this individual who passed away had creditors. I mean, he owed money to people. He also had a ketubah to give to his wife. Now, Yorshe Ha'av, the heirs of the father, would say, Haben met Rishon, the son died first, V'achar kach met Ha'av. And then after, the father passed away. And that way, the surviving brothers, they would be sharing the estate of the father that passed away equally. Because it would be since the son died first, then he would have not had a share in the estate. However, Bali Chov, the people that he owes money to, the son in this scenario, the people he owes money to, they say, no, Ha'av Met Rishon. The father passed away first, therefore the son has a share in the estate of his father when the father, V'achar Kach Met, the father passed away. And therefore the people who were owed money would be able to collect their money from a share of the father's estate. That's their argument. Were it not the case, maybe the son doesn't have much money and wouldn't be able to collect much money. So Beit Shama says, in that situation, we've got a suffix, simply yachlokal. We'll simply divide between the two of them. And why is that? That is because Beit Shama's of the opinion is, since we have a shtar, meaning since the loan was written in a document, it's considered as if it's already collected. And the reason why that's important is because then it's as if they already have a chazaka. I mean, the creditors have a chazaka, they've got a claim. The brothers have a claim, they have a chazaka, meaning before anything happened, they were going to inherit the property of their father. So therefore, we've got a chazaka against another chazaka. And therefore, what do we do in that situation? We've got no other option but to split it. Beit Hillel says, no, nechasim bechezkatan. According to Beit Hillel, they are of the opinion that the only people that really have a chazaka are the Yorishim. The creditors, we don't consider it as if they have a chazak. We don't consider it as if it's already collected like Beit Shammai. So therefore, the only people that have a chazak are already a presumed status of being, in other words, prior to all these things, who are the people that already had a claim to the estate? These are the brothers. So therefore, if the creditors want to dip into the state to collect money that was owed to them by the son, then they would have to bring a proof that indeed the father died before the son. So we'd fall back on the principle of Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. That's the Mishnah today.